Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and today I mixed it up with a lot of different topics. We're going to talk about free motion quilting. We're going to talk about working with burlap, and this is going to be an amazing segment. It was fascinating to look at the burlap. And then in the second half of the show, we're going to talk a lot about creativity, just sort of different aspects and different ways we quilters might want to think about what we do. So I'm very, very excited to talk free motion quilting with Christina Camelli. She is a quilt maker, she's an author, and she has a new book out called First Steps to Free Motion Quilting, 24 Projects of Fearless Stitching from CNT. And this is, you know, not just for beginners. It is an incredible book. And I thought, oh, this would be really great. I got to meet her at the trade show. And I thought, oh, you know, let's have her come on and share what her book's about. So welcome to the show, Christina.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks for having me on.
Now, you know, I'm always, you know, curious how long sort of it takes people to get comfortable with free motion quilting. What was the process for you as a quilt maker?
Gosh, I've been quilting for about 10 years now, and I started doing free motion quilting on my very first quilt. And I would say I did a couple of tiny quilts first, and then I did a bed size quilt. And by the time I was done with that bed size quilt, I felt a lot more comfortable with it.
Oh, I can imagine. You did some small ones and then a bed size. It's like that's not for the weak at heart, is it?
Well, I think it does take a little bit of bravery to get started, but there's something about free motion quilting that's really fun, and it can be relaxing when you remind yourself to let your muscles relax. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you let yourself get comfortable with it, I think it can happen pretty quick.
Now, the part that I really it's great to have you on to talk about is that you quilt on your home machine. And in the industry, we call those a domestic machine. You know, it's what you're sewing on. It's what you're blanket stitching on. So what do you think about home machines? I mean, did you have to go through several of them to find one that really was, you know, the one you love?
Oh, well, I definitely have had some machine turnover in the past decade. And I don't always like to answer the question, how many sewing machines do you have?
Right.
But, you know, when I started quilting, it was on this plastic, this 1990s Singer from, I don't know, from Sears probably.
Yeah.
And since then, I moved on to some vintage machines. Like, I have an old Bernina Record, and I had an old Singer 401A, the Slant-O-Matic. Mm-hmm. And now I have a Juki, which is a mid-arm. It has a little bit more space under the arm, which is convenient. But I think all of them have done just fine for free motion quilting. You just have to, you know, get your feel with the machine. You know, each machine is a little bit different in the responsiveness of the pedal, or maybe things that might throw off your tension or whatever. And so when you kind of get to know your machine and get to know what needle or what thread or how fast you push the pedal or take your foot off the pedal, then you kind of get that intimacy with your machine that lets you do more and more as time goes by.
You know, one of the things that I noticed that as I progress through my machines, as many of us do when we're learning, we get better and better machines, is that some of my early machines, they really weren't designed to be good for free motion quilting. I had to like cover the feet dogs. You know, it didn't have a good darning foot on it. And there's those kind of things you learn as you progress. When you started working on your book, what was your sort of thought for how people should use the book?
Well, I was hoping to make a book that would be really helpful no matter where somebody was at in their free motion quilting practice. I kind of put four different sections into the book. The first section, I thought, this is for absolute beginners, for people who've never heard about a free motion foot or a darning foot. This is all the information they need. And then the bulk of the book is the practice projects. If you already know the basics of free motion quilting, but you've just been stuck. You don't really know what to practice on, and you don't feel ready for a quilt. So that's the section that really motivated me to write the book, to provide these quick practice projects, make something useful while you're practicing free motion quilting. So that's the section that's kind of for everybody. Mm-hmm. And then there's a troubleshooting guide, because I've gotten into some situations where I just wanted to cry. Why is my thread keep breaking? Why am I getting these loops on the bottom? Yeah. And so I kind of put in all the things to help people through those parts. And then there's also a quilting designs chapter, because I definitely, sometimes I just sit down to quilt something and then all I can think of is meandering.
Right.
And so I wanted to have a nice resource there to get the ideas flowing.
And I really like that part, because you take it, let's say you have like a feather. I mean, not a feather. Let's do the leaf. You have the one that's a leaf, and you've done it a couple different ways. Where so you have the spine, and then you show them how to attach the leaf. And it's sort of a step out, which is better than just like, for me, I like seeing it progress. So you showed how your drawing progressed. Do you draw on paper first to sort of warm up sometimes? Have you ever done that?
I do. I think that is super useful. You know, free motion quilting is kind of like drawing with thread, only you're moving the paper instead of the pen. And so it does make sense that if you haven't figured out how to draw it with a pen, the design with a pen, then you're probably going to get stuck when you try and do it with thread. So it can really improve with that first stitching session with a new design if you take the time to make sure you understand how the design is formed first. Kind of work out your spacing issues, figure out what to do when you get stuck in a corner, that kind of stuff.
Now, I also noticed in some of the photos that you're wearing gloves. Do you always wear gloves, or is that just sort of...
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, even for little projects, I feel so strange trying to quilt without gloves. And it's not that I can't, but I feel like I have to put so much more pressure down on the piece that I'm quilting in order to move it with the precision that I want to move it, that my hands get tired faster, my muscles get tense sooner. And so the quilting gloves just give me that extra traction, you know, because I'm not a gecko. It gives me sticky fingers and lets me quilt a lot longer in comfort.
Now, do your gloves that you use have any kind of little pressure points on the bottom, or do you find that people that you can use this any kind of glove?
I think there's a lot of varieties. I've heard of people using all kinds of stuff. I tend to use those Fawns and Porter gloves that have the little grippy dots on them.
Mm-hmm.
But you can increase the traction on your hands with, some people use just latex gloves, you know, like healthcare gloves, or dishwashing gloves. Those sound really hot to me. I don't think I could do that.
Plastic.
Gardening gloves.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking the gardening gloves, because they also have sometimes sort of gripper or rubber tipped ends on them.
Some people love those for quilting.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the troubleshooting part, because I think that that's such a useful section, because people don't quilt, you know, like every single day aren't going to sit down to free motion quilt. So it might be actually months before they sit down between projects. What kind of things do you mention in there?
I talk about what happens, what things you can try if your thread is breaking, if you're finding that your machine starts skipping stitches, if you turn, you know, sometimes the quilting looks fine on the front, but you turn it over and there's these loops on the back. What can you do about that? Mm-hmm. What if your needle breaks, or your bobbin thread is showing up on the top, or what if you keep getting these funny bubbles and tucks and tuckers on the front of the quilt? You know, those are all things that can provide a lot of frustration for new free motion quilters. And I felt it was sort of morally wrong to write a beginner's free motion quilting book and not include what to do about that. You know, my goal is to help more people feel happy and excited about free motion quilting. And so the troubleshooting chapter was necessary for sure.
So what can those loops be? Do you have like just one of the things they could be, the loops on the back, if you get those?
Yeah, well, I think, and I know you have Leah Day on your show sometimes, and she says the same thing. Sometimes loops are a problem, and sometimes they just mean that you need to match the speed that you're moving your hand with the speed that you're having your machine stitch.
Mm-hmm.
But it's possible that your tension is out of alignment. Certainly on some of my machines, you know, on my current machine, I don't really need to change my tension when I start free motion quilting, but some of my older machines I did need to increase the top thread tension, and that's not a problem. If you have to do that, that's that's your machine, and you're getting to know your machine. And then also, you know, I don't know if you have this problem, but lint under your stitch plate can just cause so many funny problems. And sometimes if I'm getting loops on the back, the thing that ends up fixing it is cleaning the lint out from under that stitch plate.
Ah, yes. Clean the machine. Yeah, the batting creates a lot of lint.
Right. Yes, you have to do it maybe every, I'd say, 2 or 3 bobbin changes. I have to pull up that stitch plate and clear out all that extra fluff.
Yeah. Get all the stuff out. I use a paintbrush sometimes.
Oh, yeah. A little tiny one.
Yeah. Just have a soft and it grabs the bristles, grab it. So give
me a tip. That's a really good idea.
Yeah. Give me a tip for practice. We have about.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I like to get new free motion quilters doing is to have them start stitching on a print fabric. So most print fabrics will work, some better than others, but you make a quilt sandwich out of that, and then you just start stitching along, kind of echoing the design of the print, whether it's circles or flowers or whatever. You're just working on the coordination, the eye-hand coordination of getting the stitching where you want to go. And this is nice for a beginner because then they're not having to think about a quilting design that's new to them. They don't have to choose where they're going next. They just can work on getting their eye-hand coordination down. So that's something that I like for new quilters.
Well, Christina, what I really, really like too in your book is all of the different smaller projects. We only have like about 30 seconds, but you have so many great projects that people can practice on in the book.
Yeah.
Give me your favorite one. What is your favorite?
My favorite is this Quilt As You Go quilt. It has 25 different blocks that are each quilted in a different design. So it's for somebody who's really wants regular free motion practice. They can quilt all these separate blocks, and then by the time they're done, they pretty much have the quilt. They just need to join them together to make a quilt.
Oh, perfect. And it's really, it really looks nice. You used solids, didn't you?
Thank you. I did. I used solids. You can see the stitching really well on that solid fabric.
Right. When you're practicing, you don't want to hide what you're doing because you need to
see.
Right.
It's nice. It's nice to have as much visibility as possible.
Well, Christina, this has been wonderful. Your book is First Steps to Free Motion Quilting by Christina Camelli. And your website is afewscraps.blogspot.com. Thank you for
Thank
being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Pat. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye. We'll be right back
Bye-bye.
After the break.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. And I have to tell you, if I'm in a quilt show and there is pretty fabric, I am like every quilter, right? We stop, like dead in our tracks. We have to go in that booth at the show. We have to see what that fabric's all about. And I was walking along and saw Fiber on a Whim's booth. And, you know, the fabrics looked very hand-dyed, but they also had this amazing texture. So, of course, I went in there and it was burlap. And I'm not joking, burlap. It was soft. It was beautiful. And so I had to find out about this. And so Kristen Rodriguez is here to tell me a little bit about working with burlap and the business that she runs with her mom, Jan. So thanks for being here, Kristen.
Thanks for having me.
Now, do you call yourself a quilter or a crafter? Because you sort of cater to a large variety of mixed media people, art people with your burlap.
I would say more, yeah, that I associate with being like a mixed media artist because I do quilting, but I also do scrapbooking type of mixed media projects. So I use paper and a number of different fibers. So I guess I'm like a little flip of the coin up in the air as to what I would consider myself.
So you put more quilts out when you're at the quilt show vending and, you know, more, you know, the other things out. So tell me a little bit about how you found burlap. Were you using it for things other than quilting first, or did quilting come first?
Well, we've always done quilting products and more traditional type of fabrics. However, in the past couple of years, we have honed in more on hand dyeing different fibers and textures. We don't do the norm too well, and so we were always looking for the different hands of the fibers and the different textures. And so we settled on doing burlap probably about a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. and we've really been dyeing it since then, and it's really come on pretty strong here in about the past couple of years in home deck projects.
Well, that's what really got my eye, is that I had been seeing burlap, but usually in tan, you know, like the natural mm-hmm. burlap color, and yours are like juicy colors, pinks and blues, and oh my gosh, they were just totally wonderful. Why don't you tell me first just a little bit about burlap itself, because it is soft. The burlap you use is soft.
When we first get it, it's not necessarily all that soft. However, in the dyeing process, it's washed 3 or 4 times. It's soaking in water. So it mm-hmm. starts breaking it down just ever so slightly. So it's not that mm-hmm. stiff burlap that everybody's used to. So that is why our burlaps that we sell are a lot softer in hand. They don't give off as much fuzz as the burlap typically does because mm-hmm. they've been washed so many times.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense because, you know, so many fabrics also, you know, do soften up when we wash them.
Exactly.
Now, because do you also sell it just right off the bolt too?
We don't, actually. We've because we do a lot of the mixed media and art quilting, and those are the people we kind of cater to, and then mm-hmm. also sewists that like doing home deck things, mm-hmm. that a lot of times they're not looking for that huge amount of the dyed burlap. Mm. So we sell it in 2 different sizes, which are like little half things that we call small that are about 14 inches by 18. And then we do what we call a fat quarter, which is 18 inches, and it's 29 inches wide due to the original width of the fabric.
Right, right. And does it shrink a lot when you're
oh,
going to?
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
It does. We have to cut it super large that as it goes through all of the washing cycles and hot, that we allow for that shrinkage to occur.
Now, after you've gone through your dyeing process, does the person who's going to use it, if they intend to wash the item, let's say they're putting it on clothing or they're putting a piece in a quilt, do they need to pre-wash still?
They can if they'd like, because there's everybody has a certain comfortability, you know, comfortable factor that they need mm-hmm. to meet. And mm-hmm. so a lot of people, when they do buy hand dyes, they do wash it again. Mm-hmm. We try our best to make sure that, like, the last cycle that it's coming out of, that there is no color coming off of it. And we do our absolute best. And a lot of the projects we use it in are not going to be washed again.
Right.
However, if somebody is going to wash it again or wants to use it in a project that could be washed, to wash it again is not going to hurt it in any way, shape, size, or form.
Okay. So,
we do edge stitching around the edge so it doesn't unravel and anything like that. So,
that's good to know. That's good to know. So the edges, like if they put it in their bag, it's not going to be, you know, putting off burlap.
It'll put off slightly a little bit of burlap just because of the nature of the fabric.
Right.
But if they put it into a lingerie bag, like those little mesh bags, then mm-hmm. there won't be any problem. That there might be a little fraying at a corner, but it's not going to be anything major.
Very good. Very good. So now tell me a little bit about your company, Fiber on a Whim. How did you and your mom start this?
Well, for as long as I can remember, my mom had always talked about wanting to own a quilt shop and wanting to do that. In fact, she sent me when I was 18 to Houston to take a business class about owning your own quilt start. So I've been going to Houston since I was 18.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And so when we started it about 9 years ago, I was just going to be the financial side. I didn't sew. I didn't do any of this type of, art or anything. Because she was always, published in magazines, had quilted and show, and I was like, I can't do anything that good, so I'll be the business side. I got sucked in really quickly, so that didn't last long.
It didn't last long. Oh, my gosh. Your mom's name is Jan Gerard. Did I pronounce that right?
Jan Gerard. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so people might recognize her work if she's published and see that. Yeah, Jan was like, no, Kristen can come on the show. So that's that's why Jan's not here.
Yeah, so, we have fun throwing each other to the bus, depending on which one we want to do. And so she was like, oh, you can talk better on the radio.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. It's a shared thing. But you both are usually in your booth at the show, right? Because you do the whole thing.
Yeah, we both are. It might change up a little this year, depending on scheduling things. Mm-hmm. But normally it's both of us in the booth.
So tell me a little bit about the colors that you dye, and sort of, you told me that color is really your passion.
Oh, I love color. That's the one thing, since I've taken a couple of classes in the quilting realm and stuff like that, but if there's anything, if somebody uses a technical term on a stitch or anything like that, I have no idea what they're talking about. I'm self-taught in a lot of the things that I do, but I can do color. I think it's just something intuitive that I can do, that I can put it together. And no matter what, I'm comfortable with that. Somebody can sit there and go, no, I don't like that color together. And I can change it out really quickly and find what they like. But that is one thing that I know I can do. So the colors that we tend to dye are very bright, very vibrant. We have added some neutrals in because we found out when a lot of people do landscape quilting or anything like that, you know, the neutrals come in handy for a lot of different features on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's nice if you're going to make a project to maybe have a contrast that's a little less vibrant. So you had a quilt in your booth, which I think most people were just amazed that it was burlap fabric. Go ahead.
That quilt was actually Osnaburg.
Oh, okay. Well, that's why. That's
yeah.
Which is a slightly different fiber, and you also work with that.
Yes, that's a cotton fiber, but it has that linen-like texture, and so it gives a suede look.
Yes.
To when you use it. So.
Okay. Well, in the back of my head, I was thinking that one was burlap, and I thought, wow, that's really soft. Yeah.
I know. You're like, that's amazing.
That's amazing.
we have, like, when we do booths, a lot of times the burlap, we'll use it as, like, we had a Christmas stocking on display there in Houston, a wine bottle gift bag. And we do pillows out of it all the time, and we'll stencil, designs onto the pillows, and those go over really well. But then a lot of times in the art quilting world, we use it as the background of the piece, because it just gives a different texture. It gives a little different dimension. And a lot of people then want to get closer and look at it up nice and up close because they can't understand what's giving off that different look.
So when you're handling this, you know, you've bought a piece and you've got it home, and most of the time you're going to have to cut it. So is there anything that people need to know? Does it stretch more, so you have to be more delicate when you're cutting and sewing?
It definitely can stretch on you. That is a possibility. A lot of times when we do it, if we're cutting it down into anything that then we just want to make sure that it's not unraveling, we'll do a really close edge stitch about an eighth of an inch in from the shape that you've cut, and that'll just help hold the fibers intact as you work with it. And then as you make all of your final stitching and seams, then that'll just hold it all nice and tight. And you don't have to worry about it, but it can stretch ever so much.
Now, I also noticed that some of the samples that you have, and you actually have them on your site too, fiberonawhim.com, and on your blog there, you will like top stitch a piece onto other things.
Exactly. Exactly. We like the Jean Wells version of like creating a quilted background, where you'll take like maybe a, you know, just a solid piece of fabric and just do all of your quilting, straight lines, wavy lines, whatever you want, and then attaching a, you know, or almost mounting another piece onto it with invisible thread. And so that's a lot of what we'll do, is we'll use the burlap as the background, and then we'll mount it onto that quilted matting.
Now, do you teach classes on any of this?
We do. We travel around and teach. I personally am teaching a class at Mancuso's Quilt Fest in Savannah. I'm teaching a couple of classes at their Denver show, and I'm also teaching for international quilt festivals in Chicago.
Ah, so people can find your whole schedule out on your website, right?
Exactly.
Exactly. Well, Kristen, this has been totally wonderful. I am like going to have to play with burlap now.
It's great fun. It really is.
And the colors are spectacular. You and your mom do a fabulous job.
Thank you. Thank you. We try hard to find ones that we, you know, really kind of speak to us at that moment and add in for depending on the season.
Well, thank you very much for being here.
We're going to
take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk creativity.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by BabyLock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. In the second half of the show, we're going to sort of dig a little deep into creativity with Monica Lee. I discovered Monica's website, Smart Creative Women, when she interviewed one of my quilting friends. She interviews creative women, just like the name sounds, about, you know, their work and what they do. Monica herself is an artist, and she just has the artist soul. She is a quilter. Yeah, she's laughing. Yeah, she's
woo-hoo!
A quilter. Too.
She's got a creative soul.
Well, hi, Monica. This is Monica. See, now you can just meet her right there.
Hello, everybody. Pat, thank you so much for having me on today.
You know, you are a person that is just so vibrant and so tuned in to what we all do being creative. I love that about learning about you and knowing that about you. Did you always feel like that you were creative?
You know, I don't. Well, I think other people, my mother assigned that role to me in her house, if we're going to go deep right away.
Right.
You know, my sister was a smart one. I was a creative one.
Oh.
But I think I'm one of those people that just thinks that everybody is creative. But I think the blessing in that is that a lot of people walk around and they're like, I'm not creative. And I think it's only because they don't cultivate it. I think everybody has it within them to be original and to be creative. So I think that is where I fall into this role of being everybody's cheerleader.
you really are. And one thing is you teach workshops too, which we're going to talk about later. But one of the things that you mentioned somewhere along the way, which just fascinated me, was to call people who create creatives, that we're creatives, and as a description. And I'm like, oh, that feels so good. It feels comfortable.
You know what, Patton? It's one of those words when you try to type it out, it always tries to autocorrect you. Well, when I'm like writing a blog about it and stuff. Yeah. But, you know, I really think that when you're a creative person, that it spills over into every area of your life. You know, if you might be at a point where you're in your life and you're not sewing, quilting, painting, but you've got small children and you're fixing these fabulous lunches with notes and them, I think creativity can show up in decorating your Christmas tree to making a meal.
Mm-hmm. And I can relate to the fact that sometimes the job or the life is so busy that you don't get to create, but you just have this need, you know, that you have to do it. And somewhere it comes out.
Yeah. You need to show up in color.
Right. And red shoes.
Yeah. Yes. You know, I think a lot of times what I get so sad about now as we're rushing through life is that it's so much is coming at us that we don't have that time, because creativity takes a little bit of a mental shift to show up and be bright and to think through your choices. And I want to cultivate that in everybody.
Tell me a little bit about your background. You are a beautiful illustrator. People can go to your site and look at your drawings and your
paintings. I'm all over the web, Pat.
Yes, yes. Just say, Monica Lee, where are you? So were you trained as an artist? Did you go to school for that?
You know, I did. I just went to a regular college and studied art so long ago, though. You know, I'm an old chick, so there weren't the computers and the programs and everything. But I think I got a foundation, and I actually fell into art when I was a young girl, almost competitively. I was going to school and the teacher, you know, said about this boy that sat next to me, oh, that's a lovely drawing. Mm. And I was like, I'm going to come back and draw better than him tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then I just kept doing it. So I just kept doing it and doing it. But it's not like I didn't certainly get off the path, because I was an international flight attendant for a long time. Mm-hmm. Which I still always did art, and I had a greeting card company, and I did a lot of creative things at the same time. But, you know, that was a job where you show up in a uniform, right? You do the same thing as everybody else. So it was a really interesting thing to be a creative person in basically a unionized job. This is why I think I'm so interested in creativity now and how it can seep out of your life if you're not careful.
So you actually had some of your art put onto fabric for quilters for a while. Tell me how that came about.
You know, that I was doing art licensing, and, you know, I had both my grandmothers were quilters. Mm-hmm. One did beautiful applique work, and the other one, which was so prolific. And so I had told my agent at the time, I want to be on fabric. And so I started drawing up collections, and it was kind of one of those dream scenarios where we sent the packages out and they landed, the first two desks they landed on kind of got in a little bidding war over my first collection.
Oh,
so yeah, I thought I was all hot to trot. That was,
yeah.
So I did about, I think, four collections for Timeless Treasures, and I was doing a lot of art licensing. And honestly, I was doing art. This is an interesting thing about creativity. I was doing it 7 days a week, and I got a little burnt out because it was very much a job. And I also was in a position where I was putting out my art or creativity in very quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, you rush through things. And I felt like I had sort of lost my way a bit. So I decided to just take a deep breath, and, you know, I actually packed away supplies. I packed away embroidery, knitting, painting, sewing, all the sewings. I packed it all away and just started Smart Creative Women and started asking, you know, interviewing all these creative women. What is your life like? Are you making any money? Is it work? Is it creativity? You know, so I was so curious about how other people were living. And then that site just took off.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. You have a ton of information on there and just wonderful, wonderful chats with creative people, lots and lots of quilters.
That was the kind of the beauty of going to quilt markets and things like that is, boy, what a nice community. All the women are so helpful. Mm-hmm. You had a question, they would just steer you in the direction. And, you know, as an artist, mm-hmm. to talk to my other art girlfriends, Amy Butler and Janine Morrison, and, you know, all these gals, Patty Young, I love talking to them about how they think through collections. Mm-hmm. And it's very creative to put the colors together and then to go see what quilters do with them after they've gone into this creative process. I love the fact that somebody takes it home and starts their own creative process with it.
Yeah, that it's like the extension of your art. It's not on the bolt. It's what the quilter or the other person does with the product.
Yeah, you know, there is nothing really more gratifying than having someone take your creativity and be creative with it themselves. Very different than having your art on a coffee mug.
Right.
Or on checks. Like, you know, I am on checks. My art is on. You can write you can write Monica Lee a check on Monica Lee.
So let's talk a little bit. We have a little time before we do that break, because after the break, the first thing I want to do is talk mood boards. But between now and then, let's talk a little bit about how a person can sort of
cultivate their originality.
yes. Let's start there.
Okay. So I have some tips. I actually was just putting these together for a talk I'm doing in Salt Lake. And so I have four tips, and one is really interesting for quilters. And number one is quiet the noise. You know, there is the funniest thing about quilters, how they are on so much social media. I think it's so interesting. Like, aren't you guys supposed to be at your sewing machines?
Right.
But I do think that we kind of are drowning in a sea of other people's voices a little bit. And I really think it's important to step away from that noise on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And I also think number two is to expose yourself to rich experiences. I think that there is a reason that you need to step out into, whether it's nature, museum, to put yourself in a library where you can't use that phone, you know, go to a museum, because there's a reason that museums are quiet, and just expose yourself to different forms of art than you're used to. So if you're used to being around fabric all the time, mm-hmm. go step out away from it to get other art experiences. I think that's a real way to get your creative juices going.
And what, to stay on that one for one more second, what could a person who's never done that before, they're like, okay, well, I have a museum near me, I'm going to go in there. Well, what can you like tell them to focus on? Because I think that's what you're really good at is, you know, what can a person who's never really gone to an art museum, what should they look at?
Well, you know what it is? It's to look at what appeals to you. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not a girl that walks into the Egyptian art section. It's just not mm-hmm. my gig.
Yeah.
So, you know, every museums are very thoughtfully laid out. Go in and see. And this is where I talk about that quiet is to mm-hmm. tune into your own sensual experience, whether you're going in and you might even find yourself drawn to the navy blue backgrounds that the frames and the pictures are on, and you might be able to go into that space and it's like a big hug. So mm-hmm. I think you kind of listen to all, like, get the whole sensual experience mm-hmm. of what you're doing. So just do what appeals to you. Don't feel obligated to go into every space in a museum. Right. First of all, they're too big.
Yeah.
You know, I went into the Boston Museum of Fine Arts the other day and they had a jewelry exhibit that I would not have necessarily stopped in. I wouldn't have thought mm-hmm. about it because it was in the special room, but oh, I just loved it. That was very unusual.
Mm-hmm. So what's your next one?
Okay, so my next one is that if you're going to really strike out and start being creative and start trying to do something maybe a little original or out of the box with your creativity, is to kind of realize that this is your sacred space. So when you start flexing your creative muscles, that you may want to insulate yourself from critics. So, you know what? You don't want to put all your creative self into someone else's hands. I think mm-hmm. that there are some parts that you probably need to leave aside to kind of nurture. So, because you have to discover what gives you pleasure first, mm-hmm. before you mm-hmm. show it to everybody else and they decide if it gives them pleasure.
Right. And also, you might not have really gotten it, your piece or your technique or whatever, to the place that you're even totally happy with it. So when you show it, somebody's reacting to something that you are not quite maybe
thought all the way out. You know what? That's that you learning to listen to your gut. You know, when you throw something out there, do you guys like this? I'm not so sure. I'm not sure I like this. People can pick up on that vibe. I mm-hmm. think that you, when you're in that unsure place, sit on it, sleep on it, maybe just show it to people that, especially if you're stretching yourself, mm-hmm. right, because that's right. where that whole, all that originality and that brilliance really comes in. Just remember to keep a piece of that to yourself. I know that sounds funny, but mm-hmm. I do think that creative people are tender. I think yes. there's, you know, yeah. yeah.
Right. it's coming from our heart. And so it's,
it does. And so now the other side of that, the flip side of that is to kind of take your ego out of the equation. Mm-hmm. And what by that I mean is kind of, I really feel like in the world of social media, you or almost any world you go to, you can't mm-hmm. long for the accolades of other people. Because if you're attaching approval to your, you know, especially your first ventures, mm-hmm. that it's just the surest way to kill your creativity. If you're counting those likes, baby.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah.
And, you know, when I was thinking of that, I remember a story a long time ago about Pablo Picasso had painted a mural in Spain. And he was, you know, off living in Paris. And this young boy who didn't know who Pablo Picasso was came and repainted the horse because the anatomy of the horse was wrong. And everybody, oh my gosh, that's terrible. And they told Pablo, and he said, well, that doesn't matter. The anatomy was wrong. He painted it right, this little young boy. Mm-hmm. And I think if Pablo Picasso can set his ego aside, mm-hmm. then so can we.
That's right. That's right. Think of it differently. Think of it differently. Okay, so what we're going to do, Monica, is we have a couple seconds before the break. I want to tell people your website again, because you have two. You have smartcreativewoman.com, which has videos and also posts from you.
That's the show, smartcreativewomen.com. Yeah.
And so they can watch these, usually about an hour-long videos, right?
Yeah, I try to get them 30 minutes and sometimes they go a little bit longer.
Okay, so we're going to take a break and when we come back, we'll keep talking to Monica Lee.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts and More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, and I'm talking to Monica Lee. She is the dynamic creator behind smartcreativewomen.com. So Monica's, you know, I found her website, I was reading everything, and then, you know, flash, Monica puts out, she goes, I'm going to host this workshop. And so, you know, I sign up for it. And this has just been, you know, it's sort of the, Monica, you have several kinds of workshops. How did you start developing those? Why did you sort of go that way?
You know, I started coaching other creatives just kind of out of default. I have a lot of opinions and everybody was contacting me. And I started coaching one-on-one. And then I realized by interviewing these very interesting women that I was interviewing and coaching that the women that were moving forward in their creative careers had they understood themselves. They understood their style. They just weren't shaken from it. They weren't riddled with doubt. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of ended up developing. Also, you know, I found myself a lot of times when I was coaching people, helping them through their website and their blogs and things that didn't click mm-hmm. and link and work. And I got a little obsessed with, you know, your online presence and, you know, so it's your whole statement, you know, mm-hmm. that you show mm-hmm. up as yourself. I also found a little bit of people would look at someone else. I'm going to look at Pat Sloan, see what she does, and I'm going to copy mm-hmm. her career. Exactly. Yeah. That does not work, people.
No.
Well, you know, it's and I think a lot of times we want to, it's just so much easier to be ourselves, but we're not taking time to get to know ourselves well enough. And I certainly feel like that has been part of my journey as, you know, every year I just get to know what I like and who I am and how I want to show up in the world just more clearly.
Now, the workshop that I took with you, you do several. Some of them are things that they can instant downloads, and some are like your smart creative style, which is very hands-on. You're there all the time. Even though it's internet, you're there all the time.
6 weeks, yeah.
6 weeks. It's very intensive. That one's very business-oriented, but it has incredible information in it for people who are creative and want to sort of, you know, work on their style. Just give me just a brief what the content is because there are a lot of business people who listen to the show, of course. And so I want them to know about it.
Well, you know, Smart Creative Style it's a 6-week course, and it kind of helps you distinguish your personal creative style as you run your business. So it's Creative Business 101. But, you know, I really felt like that your personal style and your creative business style overlap. So mm-hmm. I really wanted to be able to get people to have clear branding and clear business decisions. And when you know your style, it's a very visual world that we live in. Mm-hmm. That when you're clear about it, then you can make decisions clearly. You know how to make choices clearly. You know what fits you. So the part of the course is learning to trust your intuition and your own judgment and then edit stuff in your life.
Right. You know, and it's funny. I can tell you just real quickly, I tell people in one of my classes that, you know, you can't always buy just everything you like because it doesn't go together unless you sort of know your style already. If you already have your style so locked in, well, then you do buy just what you like. And that's what your course is just amazing, is to lock in that knowledge.
Pat, everybody always says, you know, how you need to find your style, you need to have a voice, you need to have, and I think, well, nobody is telling you how. Yeah, I'm like, oh, that's great, but how?
Yeah, how? How do I figure it out? Yeah.
So that's what I went about finding my own, and then really seeing my own light bulbs go off in my head, and then making that into an e-course. I had started with a smart creative dreaming, small, like download on the spot course that helps you sort out, do I want to be doing this as a business? What does it take to be doing a creative business? And then the smart creative style is sort of that, yes, I do. Now let's get clear about my intentions.
Now, what I promise everybody, we talk about the mood boards, and it sounds so mysterious.
Mood boards.
I know. And I first heard this by Kay Fassett. He used that term many, 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 many moons ago. I saw one of his in an exhibit of his work. They actually sent his mood board from England to Virginia and had it in the display with his his quilts. And so you unlocked for me what that is. And can you just share a little bit about...
Well, you know, I think what we did in the course is to give yourself some creative constraints with the mood boards. So we do like 5 or 6 boards within the course. And the idea is like, I can do a mood board and just throw a bunch of stuff on it. What does that actually say? Mm-hmm. But if you're asked to explore different aspects of your personality, whether it's, you know, exploring what interiors you like, which is probably a good thing for quilters, and to really dissecting what is going to go onto this board. What do I really like? What type mm-hmm. of interiors would I want to live in? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that that can help help clarify who you really are.
Now, when people do this, you had us using Pinterest.
Yeah, and you know, Pinterest because it's fast and it's easy. Mm-hmm. Pretty, but you know, certainly I did them when I was putting together, because in art licensing, I would cut up catalogs and ribbons, and I would just put them on big pieces of poster board, tape everything up, because, you know, I would even put words on it, because I think mm-hmm. that, you know, if the word playful stands out to you, then you put these things in front of you, so you are reminded the next time you see some sleek modern thing, wait, is that what I'm trying to accomplish? What am I actually trying to accomplish? Mm-hmm. You know, with whether, you know, a mood board for a quilt, a mood board for a project, or certainly a mood board for decorating your home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the editing part, can you just like give like a mini assignment? Like how would somebody go around about creating one and editing it? Because that
was
just
so key.
Well, you know,
I'll tell you a breakthrough assignment that I did for myself. And I was early one morning in my pajama pants with a cup of coffee in my hand. So what I would say about that is I was very relaxed and the sun mm-hmm. was shining through the windows and I was in a real relaxed state. Again, that goes back to being quiet. And mm-hmm. I put my camera around my neck and I walked around my house and I only took pictures of what appealed to me. Mm-hmm. So this turned out to be the most interesting thing because I had a sparkly cocktail bag laying on my dresser that did not need to be out. And I had to take a picture of it. Mm-hmm. And I took a picture of my jewelry that hangs and my chandelier, but mm-hmm. I would keep going back into my office, which was red and yellow and all these bright colors at the mm-hmm. time. And I would then I just step out of it. And what happened when I downloaded all those pictures, if you're going to do it on your phone, you can mm-hmm. put those pictures in an album. And I downloaded them onto my computer. And I was like, whoa, I have a couple of rooms in my house that absolutely nothing about that room appealed to me. And because I think, and I wasn't like doing couches, I was just doing mm-hmm. vignettes. If mm-hmm. I liked my furry rug, I have a big sheepskin rug. I took a picture of that. And I think it can be really telling about what you're really drawn to. So I was drawn to soft comfort and real sparkly, shiny things. I like sparkly, shiny things. But it was to see it all then in a different format. Mm-hmm. That made me realize that the space I was actually working in didn't reflect the other parts of me that I actually liked.
You know, and I think for somebody who's creative, they're building quilts, or maybe they're trying to gather their better color sense for what they're doing in their quilts, that they can use pictures of other things. They don't have to take pictures of fabric or pictures of quilts.
No, and that's probably the beauty of it. I think a good thing to do if I was quilting and, you know, I wanted to get maybe away from interiors, because a quilter is going to put that quilt in a house. Always think mm-hmm. of the use. What is the use of this quilt?
Yeah.
So go challenge yourself and take your camera phone into your favorite store, Anthropology, Macy's, maybe even into your own closet, and start like snapping what you like the best. So mm-hmm. now you're going into clothing. It's a different area. And or maybe go on a nature walk and then come back and look at the pictures. And then you might see this like soft red just keeps repeating itself and repeating itself. or wow, I have so much purple in my closet, or I only am drawn to pink at Macy's. And that can actually, you know, turn out to be a bit of a theme in your life. And you might find yourself, that can actually be a signature thing for you, to have this one thread of green in every single thing you do. It's a good way to see what you like and not what's on trend necessarily.
Right. Yeah, I love that part of it, because it's just focusing, because I like so many different things. I'm one of those people, there's very few things. Like, I might not be in the Egyptian exhibit either, but you know, other than that, I would be in every other exhibit there is. But I found out that I really can zone it in and tighten it up. I didn't know how to do it. So the tool was very useful.
Yeah, I think like having exercises and assignments and somebody saying, okay, let's see your results.
Right.
So it's a good thing. And I also like that, you know, what I think a lot of people in the course actually discovered, and what you might discover even with your walking around your house, one is that a lot of the things that you're drawn to might have a lot to do with your past and how you grew up. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, that was also super fascinating for us. I mean, your course was just, you really get the creative process and how people think. You can kind of, you're just in my head anyways. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, she knows how I think. Connect. You know, so I just wanted to be sure that, you know, people knew about you, Monica, because not only, you know, do you teach these classes, but your interviews with creative people are fascinating.
When you're curious, I'm a curious girl. Mm-hmm. So I like to hear where people get their ideas. It's exciting.
Right. And I think that might be where you and I, you know, bond too, because I have a radio show and that's what I like to do. I like to find out how people work and how they think. But your class, your 6-week class has just opened up again. This is January 2014. So people can go to Smart Creative Style or Smart Creative Women.
Yay. Thank you so much, Pat.
Thank you, Monica Lee. This has been wonderful. I am your host, Pat Sloan, for American Patchwork and Quilting Radio Podcast. I want you to know that you can go out to allpeoplequilt.com, where we have all kinds of really exciting things for you to look at. We have all the back shows. And if you're on allpeoplequilt.com, there is a magazines and more tab, and you can go on there and you can find the blog. You can see what's in each issue of the magazine and listen to the player, where you can hear all the back shows of the quilting podcast. So next week I will have all new guests, and we will be chatting once again about all things creative. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Visit me at patsloan.com, and I hope that you will come to one of my events.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.